What's up, Grizz Nation? Welcome to the show. It is David Isaac. This is Ethos Grizz. We're cutting off Sports Ethos Grizz. Just because I feel like that's entirely too long. I don't know. We'll work on it. We'll get better. We're coming to you. It's not really a post game. We're going to talk a little bit about the Raptors game, a little bit about the Hawks game. But honestly, you guys know what the majority of this podcast is about to be. Huge scare last night. Ja Morant goes down after playing 8 minutes. John Collins stepped on one foot. It looked like maybe an ankle at first. And then, you know, it turns out it's a knee and some funky wording in the post game from Taylor Jenkins. And I actually didn't get to listen to that last night. I was driving home after the game. Isaac hit it up for us. So we'll get his thoughts on that. And I may have some thoughts after he tells me what Jenkins says. But do you have anything really big on either of these games that you want to talk about? I know I done a post game after that Raptors game, and my biggest thing was against Nick Nurse and that Toronto Raptors team, you got to play 48 minutes, and the Grizzlies did not do that. That was just the bottom line of that game. They didn't have it for a full 48, and the Raptors ended up winning. Did you see anything differently?
Yeah, it was definitely a tale of two halves, and honestly, very similar to the game last year. I think, if I remember correctly, the Grizz got out to a big lead. I think 21 points, maybe in the first quarter, bridging into the second. And after halftime, Nick Nurse, I think, ended up getting thrown out of that game. Got a couple technicals, and Toronto just went on this run and ended up winning the game by double digits. And it's kind of what we saw in this game this year. I mean, the Grizz led 71-59. At the half, and in the second half, they were outscored 67-42, and Toronto just goes on to win 126-113. Just too much Gary Trent, too much Fred VanVleet, man. I don't know what it is, Gary Trent and Fred VanVleet, man. Certified Grizz killers. Just seems like every time they – and the Grizz that just haven't had a lot of luck against Toronto. I mean, all those guys seem to go off. I mean, Kyle Lowry, when he was there, every time they played against the Grizz, they would just go nuts, and we saw that again, man. Just couldn't get a hand on VanVleet. We kind of – Me and David talked about this for the game, about thinking, was they going to have Ja on VanVleet, or were they going to have Dylan Brooks and throw Melton at him? And we saw a lot of Ja Morant on him in the first half, and he was able to get comfortable, get off, and that continued throughout the game. Gary Trent again got hot, and just too much in the second half. The Grizz go on to lose that one. And as David said, you have to play 48 minutes against that team, man. Really well coached. I think Nick Nurse is one of the best head coaches in the NBA. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And just too much offense, man. Grizzlies still struggling on the defensive end, and they go on to lose their game. And it was I hated to see that, because in the first half, it felt like they carried something over from that Utah win. Feel like you saw times there in the first half where we probably saw some of the best stretches of basketball they played this year on both ends of the floor. And then into that second half, man, just lost it. Just came out flat, and we're never able to get it back. Toronto got confident, got going downhill, you know, winning by double digits. But, I mean, that's been a tale of the season, man. Defense has been the issue. And then you go over to the Hawks game, and obviously the elephant in the room with that is the Ja injury. But even before Ja went out, just couldn't get any stops defensively, man. Clint Capella was just a monster throughout that game, man. Just couldn't – they were getting good looks at the rim, but looked like good looks. And then Clint Capella would come in and make a defensive play that would shut it down, man. He's just – looked tremendous in that game. And again, man, defense is what's been a problem for this Grizzlies team. I mean, even in that Hawks game, I mean, they were putting points on the board, but weren't able to get stops on the other end. And eventually, the Grizzlies aren't a team that's just going to continue to put points on the board, especially if they have to execute out of half court. And even before the Ja injury, again, that game looked like it was probably heading toward another loss.
I've got something. The Grizzlies started that game. Taylor Jenkins started that game with Ja Morant on Trae Young. On what planet is that a good idea? How do you think Ja Morant is going to hold up guarding one of the better offensive guards in the league? You know, Trae Young goes off for 31, and the crazy thing is he had 5 free throws, so not many free throws for him, but hyper-efficient from the field, 12 for 16 from the field, because he was getting wherever he wanted. We had Ja Morant guarding him. And obviously Ja went out early, so not all of that falls on Ja. But you've got a guy in Dylan Brooks that's more than capable. And, you know, Dylan has proven that he can hang with and make some of the best players in the league earn it. You know, you're never truly going to shut those guys down, but you can make them earn every
bucket. You got to make them work.
And 12 for 16, it was just, the game was too easy, man. Trae Young was getting to his spots, knocking down mid-range shots. And when Steven Adams would step up too far, Capella would just roll to the basket, easy dunk.
Just easy,
I know,
man.
Like, Capella put his armpits in the rim like five times at least because there was nobody close enough to him to contest it. And it was just bad defense. And that's – I don't get the mindset behind – and obviously, you know, Ja Morant is your star. If he's like, hey, I want to guard Trae, maybe that's what happened. And that's why we saw Ja Morant beating off guarding Trae Young.
The one thing I do want to say about Ja is I've noticed this of late. He's trying on the defensive end. It's not like he's just going out there like some guys just don't play defense. Don't even give a damn. Just don't even try. He tries, man. Guys just get by him. I mean, he's just not a – that's not something that he's, I guess, done over his basketball playing career. And it's just – he's just not a good defensive player. He puts in effort. I see times where he tries to D guys up, and they just he's so slight of frame. He doesn't get around screens. When guys screens him out, he's just out of the play. Guys go straight to the basket, and that's what you see. And again, I agree with you, man. You just – you can't have Ja on Trae Young. I mean, that's just – not going to work. I understand, like you said, he's your star player, and he might see I can see him say, man, I want Trae Young, man. This is a guy that I'm compared to all the time with young guys in the league, and I want to go out there and prove to play against him. But when you got a guy like Dylan Brooks and even a D'Anthony Melton who returned to the lineup for that game, I mean, you can't have Ja out there on Trae Young, man. I mean, he's going to burn you. And you saw it earlier before Ja went out. He was just able to get anywhere he wanted to on the floor, and that allows him to not only create offense for himself, but to create offense for others. It was just way too easy for the Hawks in that game. Like I said, the two-man game, him and Capella, man, just some great passes from Trae Young. I mean, he was just at the rim, just scoring at will. And Steven Adams just wasn't doing a good job of protecting the paint, which we've seen all year. I mean, that's not something that he's known for. But, again, man, you have to give him more resistance than that. And it was just – basically a layup line, dunk line for the Hawks. They were just able to get whatever they want, and we've seen that too much this season.
Yeah, for sure, man. That is – so I'm fine admitting that I was wrong on thinking that this defense was going to be better with Steven Adams, because that's clearly not been the case.
Yeah, we're both on that train.
You know, I've kind of – At one point, I wasn't really ready to concede it for the year. And I know, like, we're 20 games into the season. We're barely, like, we're a fourth of the way into the season, 19 games, I'm sorry. But, man, I can't tell you, like, I can't put a finger on it with him. I can't say, you know, this is why or this is what's going on. But he has just not been effective. And, you know, for those of you that are listening to the show, you know, that are from New Zealand, we appreciate the listeners. We are glad that you all are tuning in, and we hate to beat up on your guy, because I can promise you there's not anybody on the planet that wanted this trade to be good and wanted Steven Adams to come back, you know, come to Memphis and completely turn it around and not look like anything like what he did in New Orleans last year. You know, he looked bad in New Orleans last year. He wasn't Steven Adams, and maybe all of the wear and tear of, you know, beating and banging all of those years has gotten to him, and that, you know, this is a new Steven Adams. But I don't know. He's not shown me anything this year to convince me that he's going to be able to turn this around.
No, I don't think so either. And I've kind of been feeling like this for a while now. I know it's early, like you said, we're only 19 games in, but I just kind of see the way it's heading, and I just don't see it getting any better. And I was with you. I mean, I talked about when they made this trade. We all knew that Steven Adams was going to come in and beat JV offensively, but why I kind of felt like this would be a good thing possibly is because you have Jaren coming back. His 15 points a game helps makes up for some of that offense, you think, from Valanciunas. And you thought that Steven Adams would be a slight upgrade, especially in the pick and roll, which he has not been, but you thought he would be. coming in, and you would think, well, that means this could be, and he thought he would give you something scoring wise as well. And he was a little bit earlier in the season, but now he's kind of regressed in that area. He's not even scoring anymore, missing a lot of shots at the rim. Man, it's crazy how many shots at his size that he misses at the rim, just bunnies. I mean, he'll get the ball missed, get the offensive rebound, and miss again. Easy tip-ins. And you were used to JV making those shots. Mm-hmm. And he just hasn't been able to do it. But you think he would be a bit of an upgrade over JV defensively, and kind of what I laid out about Jaren, what he brings on the offense and defensive end, you think it would be at worst a lateral move, if not a better move, because JV, I mean, you think Steven Adams is a better fit next to Jaren in his development, but it just has not worked out that way. I don't know why, what it is. It seems like that should be the case, but at this point, I think I've definitely seen enough of a sample size to think that it's just not going to be the case. And we've talked about this on there before. I think it's time, man. If it's me, I make the move outside of going up against some of the huge centers in the league. I'm starting Jaren at the five and Brandon Clark at the four. I think that when your team is struggling defensively, I think that gets you two guys at the floor that gives you some protection, rim protection, guys that can block shots. And especially with Ja now being out for possibly a significant amount of time, I think you need to feature Jaren, whether it works or not, man. You got to – and we saw that early in that game against Toronto. I think some of the best inside play we've seen for Jaren. There's one play where he sealed his man off, was calling for the basketball. I was like, yes, man, this is what I've been asking for all season, man. Looked really mm-hmm. good. Ended up getting in foul trouble and didn't play much in the second half, which I don't understand. I think he only had, like, three fouls, and I didn't get that.
That's what I'm saying.
Let him foul me. Yeah, I mean, you can't take the fouls with you. Yeah, you can't take the fouls with you, man. Why is this guy not playing? He's supposed to be your second guy, second in line, and, man, he's sitting on the bench with three fouls. Like, I don't get it. You can't take the fouls with you. Let the guy foul out. I mean, let him try to play duties.
Jenkins didn't – he didn't say specifically, and I apologize. I keep talking over you, man. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, you're good.
You know, he wouldn't credit it specifically to the moment that Jaren picked up that foul and sat down. But, you know, if you look at this game and the flow of that, you know, like the flow of that Raptors game, when Jaren gets that foul and goes to the bench.
It's kind of where it went downhill.
That's when it fell apart, man. You cannot – and. You can't lose games like that. They could have won this game. Just let him play. Let them go out. You know, he has got to learn how to play with fouls.
Yeah, you got to let him play through
him out of the game, and you set him out, and he only – I don't even remember. What did he play? Do you have it pulled up? What did he play in that Raptors game?
Let's see. I pull it up here.
I know it was a pretty big drop in minutes for him. I can get back to it here. But, you know, like, just put him back in there.
25 minutes. He played 25 minutes.
You know, and Jaren is, you know, he's been playing closer to 30 minutes a night. Put him back out there. Yeah, this is a winnable game.
Yeah, I didn't get that, man,
stomped. You're in the lead until he goes out and they get crazy hot. And that's what, you know, Achiuwa had an incredible third quarter. You know, he got hot, and I think he ended up
the game with seven threes. And
man, I was like, he had made two threes all year, and he made three in the game against Memphis. You know, hey, welcome home with you.
I was like, why would you do that when you were here in Memphis, man? But yeah, he's out there shooting threes, look comfortable, man. Like you said, that only had hit two coming in, man, and just kind of took over in that third quarter. You look at that analytics, and again, we've talked about this. They have guys that look at this stuff. This is their job. They're professionals that. Statisticians that look at this stuff, and we see it. We know how important Jaren is to the team and what they do when he's on the floor versus what they do when he's off of it. And you just said a guy because he has three fouls. Like, I just don't get it. Ended the game with four. I mean, let the guy foul out. Like, I don't get it, man. He has to learn. A guy that has problems playing with fouls, the only way he's going to get better is you got to let him play through them. And sitting him on the bench is definitely not going to fit the issue. So I didn't understand that one at all. I can't remember if anybody asked him about it after the game, but he didn't, like you said, he didn't really attribute the loss to that. But anybody watching this game, and again, kind of knows the impact that Jaren has on his team, and watching what happened after he left the game, and you can point to that's not the only reason why they lost, but I do think that was a big factor in this game. And we've seen that earlier. I'm thinking of the game at Portland earlier in the season where he got in foul trouble. They were doing well, kind of connected with him, going back and forth. Jaren gets in foul trouble, it takes him out, man, and Portland ends up going on like, gets up by 20. Next thing you know, they're up 20. And that's just how important he is to this team. So I think that's something that he has to improve on. But again, I'm not one of those Fire Jenkins guys. I mean, I think he's a young coach. He's learning along with these guys, but that's definitely an area where he can improve.
Yeah. If he leaves him in and Jaren fouls out in 25 minutes, so be it. So be it. You know, like I would rather go down with him fouling out in 25 minutes than him just sit on the bench while the lead that you have dwindles away and you end up getting buried to where you can't come back. And that's, you know, you can be critical that we said it on here before. We'll say it probably a million times after this. There's nobody in this organization that is above criticism, whether it's the players, the coaching staff, the front office, the owner, whatever. There's nobody above criticism. So, you know, if you want to critique Jenkins and be upset with his rotations, it's completely understandable, because there's times that I'm like, what's he doing? What in the hell's going through his mind right now? But I don't think that he's a bad coach. And that's something, you know, you don't Desmond Bain the other night, he talked about he's never had a coach like Jenkins that's had this much faith in his guys.
Yeah.
And I think that goes a long way with the players when he's like, hey, you know what to do out there, go and do it. And, you know, they get to a certain comfort level. And I'm watching when I was at this Hawks game, and once Ja went out, you know, I like my mind kind of went to worst case scenario.
Yeah.
But I started watching this offense without Ja and watching what they were doing, watching some of the design plays that they ran for Desmond Bain and stuff like that. And you can just see a different level from him this year than what he had last year. The level of confidence that, you know, instead of the, you know, this year they're doing it with Zaire. He's the corner 3-point specialist. And then I think, you know, we see some of these, you know, the dribble handoffs, the, you know, you've got the ball in your hand, go make the play. I think we'll see more of those plays for Zaire as he matures in the game. But you got to remember, he is just essentially straight out of high school. You know, he didn't play much for Stanford, and so you're not going to see much from him. But the things that we're seeing, the growth, and I got sidetracked talking about Zaire there, but the growth from Bain from year one to year two, that's because of Jenkins and the staff. Yes, Bain goes in the gym and he puts in the work and he does that, but this staff has instilled confidence in him, and they're like, hey, we're not going to, you know, pull you out of the game because you make one mistake. Go out there and play your game. And that's huge. When you have the, you know, as young as this team is, second youngest team in the NBA, he is letting these guys play. And it's rough right now. It's tough to watch at times. This Hawks game is, I had a buddy and his son with me, but this is the first game that I got up and left early in the fourth quarter, I think ever, at a game at the Forum.
Yeah, it was rough. It was rough to watch. And we've had a lot of these this season. And again, I mean, they've said that they're going to go with production and development for guys. And I think that's kind of what you see at times, and it's going to be rough. I mean, it's the same idea of why they're playing Zaire Williams versus playing some other guys. They're going to let him develop through playing. And I'm the guy that's kind of leaned towards kind of maximizing what you have. But with that situation, I'm 100% pro playing him. I think that's the right decision. I mean, you take a guy with the 10th pick, let him play. I mean, you're not winning a championship this year anyway. I think this will pay off in the long run. And to go back to your point on Bain, I said it at the time, but I think this started, I mean, it's actually started last season, but I think Summer League is really, I think how they allowed him to kind of take ownership of that team. He was the guy for that Summer League squad. And I said that would pay off going to the season. I think it really has. I think that really helped his confidence. I mean, he talked about it during Summer League and some of the post-game media stuff about wanting to be more of a guy that created, not being just a spot-up shooter, wait for guys to pass him the ball, to get him a good look. He wanted to be able to create, and he was able to do a lot of that. They had him on the ball in Summer League, and I think that really helped him. And you've seen that carry over. You've seen carry over from that. It's now, I mean, he's doing things he wasn't doing last year. I mean, taking it to the basket, creating, just doing doing all kind of stuff, high basketball IQ stuff, instead of just setting out shooting three-pointers. I mean, he's become a complete basketball player. And as you said, a lot of that has to do with this coaching staff. I think he has tremendous work ethic and motor anyway, but I think this coaching staff is really giving him the keys and instill that confidence to help push him along. And I think it's really paying off. So I definitely agree with you on all points there.
How many times have we seen him, you know, guys are closing out on him too aggressively and he just smokes them, just take, you know, puts it on the floor and gets to the basket. And one of the things that Adams is doing offensively for the Grizzlies is making great passes. There's been a number of times that Adams has been in the high post and hit Bane. I can't tell you how many reverse layups Bane's made this year off of passes from Adams, but you know, I'm glad to see it because you got to hit on your draft picks as a small market team. The Grizzlies, since Kleiman has taken over, they've done a really good job with that.
Home run on that one, man.
Yeah. So, you know, not much else. You know, the garbage time, I did not watch it. I wasn't listening to it. I was driving home whenever Aldama and Culver and Tilly and all those guys were in, in the fourth quarter.
I was gonna say I honestly didn't watch much of it either because I was doing double coverage. I covered the Tigers for Rivals as well, so I was over there doing some stuff with that as well. So yeah, I mean it was so out of hand, man. It's just such bad basketball. But I heard the guys, some of the guys came in and played really well. Gunchar ended up leading the team with 17 points. So those guys came in and garbage time. A lot of extended garbage time this season. That's not exactly what you want to see, but I guess when it happens, it's good for development for some of the young guys to get that playing time. But I think the biggest thing is the jaw injury. And I think everyone in Memphis and anyone who follows and loves the Grizzlies kind of collectively held their breath. I mean, Colin steps on his foot and he kind of walks to the sideline and just kind of hobbles on their knee, and he hobbled off the floor and ended up laying down on the floor, ended up having to be helped to the back. And I mean, I think at that point, I think most people kind of checked out on what was going on with the game and was concerned about the jaw injury. And it's tough you get guys back, you get Dylan back in the mix, you get DeAnthony Melton back for that game, and you have your star player go down, man. It's just tough. And it was scary because anytime you have those kind of non-contact injuries, because I mean, Collins stepped on his foot, but it didn't really look like that was the cause of it. It was a weird deal because usually when that happens, you think it's an ankle, but you could see immediately that it was his knee that swear, because when he went down to the ground, he was definitely holding his knee. And yeah, they say knee strain, but we don't know how severe it is. And you know how the Grizzlies handle injuries. I mean, I don't know. We probably won't ever get any real substance on what's really going on. I mean, they'll just say he's week to week or whatever. After the game, Taylor Jenkins, I didn't really like the comment, the kind of the way that he said it. He said that Ja will return this season, but they have no timetable on it. And that will return this season, that doesn't sound good to me. And we talked about this before we came on. Ja has always kind of been the guy that supersedes kind of their cautiousness in the way that they handle injuries. We saw the ankle injury last year, and he came back, I think, in a couple of weeks. That had been anybody else on the team, they probably would have been out a couple months with kind of how cautious they are. But I think Ja's one of those guys. I don't think they're going to hold him back. But I think this might be different. I think you're – star player, you're dealing with a knee. He's a guy that's extremely athletic, explosive, and you want to make sure this is right. So I got a feeling this is not going to be one of those ones that they rush him back however long it was. So that's a month or 3 months or 2 months, however long it is. I think they're going to take their time with this one. I don't think we're going to see him rush back here in 2 weeks and he's going to be back. Now, could be wrong. I mean, like I said, I know the work ethic that he has. They talked about how he attacked that rehab on an ankle last year, but he was at practice today, but he was on crutches and with a knee brace today. So this could be something that could keep him out for a while, man. We'll see, man. What were your thoughts on it? You were at the game. What were your thoughts on it when it first happened?
So, you know, my seats are on the visiting end of the floor behind the backboard. And, you know, I saw it happen. When it initially happened, he was hobbling. It looked like that ankle injury from last year. And I'm like, oh man, it was his ankle. Yeah. And then he got over to the sideline and he was immediately grabbing that knee. And I'm like, oh shit, you know, because in real speed, you can't see John Collins stepping on his foot. And the weird thing is, like, I've watched that replay time and time again, and he stepped on the opposite foot. He didn't step on the foot.
Yeah, it's weird, yeah.
And it's – while we kind of – you get a sigh of relief of, okay, it's just a knee sprain, but these are preliminary scans.
Yeah.
We won't really know until sometime next week where we're at with this. If it's a, you know, a grade one or grade two knee sprain, you're looking, you know, 2 to 4 weeks, kind of what you were talking about.
Yeah.
But sometimes a knee sprain can require surgery depending on if you had damage to ligaments and stuff. And we're not going to see that. We're not going to see that with these preliminary scans. And obviously that's worst case scenario. And we're hoping and praying that that is not the case for him. But you could be looking at a Jaren situation.
Yeah.
And if they go to get these scans, you know, Ja could be out until, you know, around this time or later next year.
And I didn't like the way Jaren sounded either. In the post game media availability, when he talked about it, he was like, man, you just hate to see a guy go down like that. And his body language, and him and Ja are really close. So, you know, Ja had spoken to him, I'm sure, about how he's feeling or whatever. Jaren didn't seem optimistic at all about it, and that kind of worried me. Another thing that kind of worries me is I'm not sure if he had the MRI this morning or when he had an MRI, or he just had preliminary x-rays or whatever last night. He came to the bench, back on the bench last night, no crutches, walked out on his own. But this morning or this afternoon when they had practice, he was there, but he was on crutches and had a knee brace on. And that kind of alarms me because last night he didn't. So maybe on those preliminary scans, they were like, oh, well, this is not as they thought. Maybe they saw something else this morning. Maybe he actually had an MRI. Like I said, the Grizzlies are extremely hush-hush when it comes to these type of things. So we don't know what's going on. Even us in the media, we usually don't have any idea what's going on because they're so tight-lipped about it and kind of weird about it. They'll just say, oh, well, he's week to week. We'll have an update in a month or in 2 weeks, we'll have an update. And that's just kind of how they operate with these things. But I'm starting to get a feeling that this might not, I don't know if it's anything catastrophic. Like I said, I don't know that, but I don't think this is just going to be something where he's going to pop back from in a couple of weeks. I think we're going to be without him for a while. And I think if it is anything semi-significant with Ja, I think you do want to be extremely cautious with it because this is your franchise guy. I mean, you don't want to rush him back because, again, being the type of player that he is, using his athleticism, the way he jumps, his explosiveness, you want him to be 100%. And you don't want this to be something that lingers with him and you want to make sure he's right. So, again, man, I think he needs to take the requisite time, whatever that is, to be out. And I mean, me and David kind of joked through DM other night, like, if he is out for any significant time, man, I'm starting to look at draft prospects. I know it's extremely early to even make those thoughts, man, but it's in the back of my mind because even with Ja, they've struggled. I mean, this, especially now, if he's going to miss significant time, it's no guarantee that this team is going to make the playoffs. I mean, even if he comes back this season, with the way they were playing with him and now being without him, man, they're going to struggle. I don't think there's really any doubt about that. So I don't think there's anything wrong with kind of keeping an eye on that, man. And just a couple names here. Two guys that are on my list right now is Jaden Ivey.
Oh, man, no, I ain't gonna, can't do it, man.
Gotta do it, man. I'm just gonna throw them out here, man. Just in the back of your mind, man. It's not saying it's gonna be the case. They got 3 first round picks, so maybe even if they make the playoffs, they can move up in the draft. So two names that I like, man, Jaden Ivey and Patrick Baldwin Jr. Those are two guys that I love. I mean, I know it's extremely early. We don't know what's gonna happen with that, man. But just be in the back of your mind, man. Takeaton.com is up and ready to go. But oh man, hopefully that's not the case, man. I know it's extremely early, and hopefully Ja gets back. But I'm a little bit worried, man. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I don't even want to, like, you know how much I love draft coverage. And, you know, I said
you know,
that
man,
kinda,
I love it, man.
Kind of jokingly. But I really do not want that to be the case. Like, I
hope not.
Just so we're clear, just everybody that's listening, I want you all to know that, you know, we kind of, you know, it's not a joke about the injury. That's not what we would never, ever, ever do that. And that's, I saw somebody had made a comment about karma.
Yeah, I saw that for talking about Zion.
Yeah, like Pelicans guy. This is the one thing that like I didn't want to really get into that a whole lot, but the one thing that made me happy is another Pelicans fan checked that dude. And that
like to see that,
That and I'm gonna tell you right now, if I see a Grizzlies fan on some stupid stuff like that, I'm gonna call him out on it too, because it like I'm not about that. But we were kind of being realistic about it. Without Ja Morant, if he misses an extended amount of time,
yeah, man, just being
this
real.
This team is a lottery team, and there's a lot of talent on this team. But the problem, what they don't have is a primary playmaker. Tyus Jones, good backup. And in certain lineups, he can go and start and be effective. But he is not the type of point guard that is going to help lead this team to the playoffs. So without Ja Morant, your expectations for this team drop dramatically.
Completely change, yeah.
And that's really where this, you know, us discussing that, that's where that comes from.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, this is not me joking about the injury and thing at all. It's just, if he's out a significant amount of time, I mean, that starts to become your reality. I mean, we saw this team be able to stay afloat last year when he went out with ankle injury for a couple of weeks. Kyle Anderson playing out of his mind. But if you just kind of look at the way this team was playing this season, even with Ja, I mean, it's going to be tough because, I mean, they're hanging their hat on when games where they're winning or games where they could really put points on the board. And I mean, you have a guy that's averaging 25 points a game. Without that guy, you're not going to be able to replace their production offensively. And if he's out a significant amount of time, I mean, it's just being real. I mean, I'm a draft guy anyway. So I love talking drafts. So even without that, I'm still looking at these guys, evaluating these guys, because I watch a lot of college basketball working for Rivals and covering the Tigers. So those are just two guys that I love, and Jaden Ivey has been a guy that a lot of Grizzlies fans have perked up as the son of former Grizzlies assistant Nyel Ivey, now the head coach of Notre Dame women's basketball. I mean, he – and one reason I think why a lot of Grizzlies fans like him is because of the comparison to Ja. I mean, if you watch him, just kind of looks like him, the whole style, the swag, the way he plays, really reminds you of Ja. And Ja is a big fan of his as well. He tweeted – about him the other day, just kind of said pro, like that he's going to be a pro. So Ja's watching him as well. And again, man, as a guy that I really love, again, I hate to even be mentioning that on here, but I'm just with the reality of the situation, if he misses a specific amount of time, even if it's like a month, month and a half, 2 months, it's going to be tough, I think, for this team to kind of stay in that top 10. I think it's just going to be a tough road. And again, man, they have 3 first round picks right now. Even that Lakers pick, man, the Lakers are not looking good. I mean, you think at some point they're going to get it together, but I mean, they're having games where you're getting almost 30 apiece from a LeBron AD and they're still losing basketball games. So, I mean, you look at a situation where they could have 2 picks very early in this draft and the Utah pick, you think it's going to be in the bottom of the first round unless something goes on with them. They have some significant injuries, something like that. But again, even if they do make the playoffs, I mean, they have ammunition to move up in this draft and there's a guy they like. So, yeah, man, that's just kind of where I'm coming from with it. But hopefully that's not the case. Hopefully this is a 3-week, 4-week thing for John. He's able to get back. But, again, if he's not, man, I think it's going to be tough. And I don't want to be doom and gloom right now, man. This is just reality.
Yeah, and you look at you mentioned Kyle Anderson and the way that he played when Ja was out last year. Kyle's struggling. He's on the struggle bus so far.
He's not that guy that he was last year.
And obviously you don't expect the level of production that you saw from Anderson last year because he was in a starting role with Jaren out injured. So I don't expect him to go out and look like he did last year. But in this Hawks game, he was 0-for-8 from the field, 0-for-5 from 3. He had 1 3-pointer where he practically dropped the ball as he was bringing it up. I don't know what happened, but that shoulder thing keeps coming to mind, man. It's like, is he really having issues with that shoulder again?
I've talked about that on here. And again, I don't think anybody, it kind of stood out to anybody else. Nobody said anything about it. But at Media Day, when he made that comment, it stuck with me that he said, well, the shoulder injury is kind of something that I might have to be dealing with all the time. It's just a pain tolerance, basically maintenance issue. And he didn't say anything like that I heard last year. He didn't even mention the shoulder last year. So the fact that he kind of volunteered that, no one had asked him about it, that kind of made me think, man, maybe that shoulder has become an issue for him over the summer, and he's just kind of foreshadowing what might happen, because that was ugly. Like, that play, he tried to shoot the basketball, like, lost it, had to re-catch it and caught it again. He made that shot, didn't he? I think he actually made it.
No, he didn't. He didn't make a single shot at all last night.
Okay. I thought he made that three.
No.
But yeah, he dropped the ball, kind of shot it again. That did not look good at all. I'm really thinking that shoulder has been an issue. I mean, that situation kind of goes back to San Antonio. He was having issues back when he was playing for the Spurs with that shoulder. And I think he had fully recovered from it last year. You kind of saw that hit go away, but it's back completely and now even worse this season. And I just think that's an issue for him. And I just don't think he's going to be – with Jaren back, he's definitely not going to be that player. But, again, he's just not shooting the basketball well right now. And we saw last year where he had really improved in the area, and I think it has a lot to do with that shoulder.
Yeah, wouldn't be surprising at all. Man, I don't really have much else to talk about. You know, we talked on the injury. We gave you as much information as we have right now. As they update, obviously, you know, we'll talk about it on the show. If we get a big update, a good prognosis or bad, whatever the case may be, we will talk about it. We may just launch a special show to jump into that. That's a short, quick hitter or whatever. But, you know, right now it's all prayers up for Ja Morant and that knee.
Sure.
And that, you know, that it is more of the short term rather than the long term. And, you know, we want him to be healthy. Like Isaac said, his athleticism, the stuff that he does, this is not something – an ankle is one thing, man, but knees can be long-term.
Yeah.
You know? And you do not want it to be a lingering thing to see it, you know, be a debilitating injury, because that would be – man, that would be a massive, massive hit on what's shaping up to be a fantastic career. So, you know,
And I was going to say even short-term – for him, you hate to see it, because, I mean, he was having, I think 100% he was going to be an all-star.
All NBA.
Can't be the case now if he came back in a couple of weeks, but if he isn't able to get back, that you hate to see that. But I think he's going to have plenty of opportunities in the future, but you just kind of hate to see it. I mean, he was having all NBA type season, all-star for sure, I think, and you just kind of hate to see that derail. So, again, I hope he's able to come back, but, again, with him at his size, I mean, you want him to have – he has to have that explosiveness and that athleticism. And like you said, an ankle is one thing, but a knee is something completely different. So you need that to be 100% and don't want that to be something that lingers. But especially, man, a guy that young, this early in his career, man, you don't want to be having a guy that's having serious knee issues. So that's not something that you want to see going forward, man. So get that knee right, Ja. Definitely prayers up. I think all of Memphis is behind him, and they want to see him back sooner rather than later. But however long it takes, man, you got to get that knee 100%, no doubt.
So I want to talk about one more thing, and then we can get out of here. And we can make this kind of shorter. We can make it take a little bit, however you want to handle it. Who do you expect to see step up in this time? We know, like, I say absolute 100% best case scenario, it's 2 weeks, I would say. So for the next 2 weeks – who do you expect to be the, if it's more than one, that's fine. But, you know, is there one specific guy that you think is going to step up for this team offensively?
I think it needs to be Jaren. I don't know if that will be the case, but man, if he's going to be your number two guy, I mean, this is the opportunity. And again, we kind of saw some of that early on in the Toronto game. I mean, you saw him calling for the ball in the post. He was aggressive, going in the paint, not just hunting three-pointers. And that's what you want to see from him. And I think, especially now with Ja out, I think you're going to need to see more of that. So I think it needs to be Jaren, and I'm really hoping it's Jaren. I think Desmond Bane, obviously, is a guy who we've seen at another level this year. So his scoring is definitely going to be important. And he's shown the ability to really put points on the board. And Dylan Brooks, clearly, I mean, he's had some good games, but he's clearly not been himself. I don't think he's figured out his role with him, with now having Jaren back out there and what Ja was doing and Ja being another level. I still don't think he's 100% comfortable in where he is right now with the team. I think he's still working his way back in. But I think those three guys are the guys that you kind of need to step up. But I think Jaren needs to be the head of the snake. I mean, if he's going to be your second guy and he's going to be – you paid him like he's your second guy, I think this is the time that he really needs to step up. And hopefully we start seeing that tomorrow night. They take on the Sacramento Kings. Schedule does not stop because Ja Morant injured, man. They still got to go out there, play the games. And you look at the injury report for Sacramento. Rashawn Holmes is out with an illness. Harrison Barnes is doubtful with a foot injury. And Mo Harkless is questionable with a knee injury. So they might get some breaks there with three of their better players out. But, I mean, I think they just need a win right now and something to feel good about. Because, I mean, you're looking at a 0-3 homestand. That's just not what you want. So it would be nice to see Jaren come out and have a big game tomorrow night. I think Jaren is the guy that you want. I think Bane is going to do what he's going to do. And hopefully Dylan keeps working his way back in. But answer that question is definitely Jaren Jackson Jr. I think you want to see him step up and be the leader of this team right now.
Yeah. I think you really saw the guys rally last year when Ja went down. And I feel like that's going to be the case again this year. And, you know, for me, I think the guy Desmond Bane, before Dylan Brooks came out, he was playing at a really high level, you know, getting to his spots, knocking down shots, whether it was threes or mid range. And I suspect that Jaren's going to be taking some more shots, but more than anything, I want to see them executing half court offense, because you're not going to have that guy. You know, you've got Tyus Jones. It's a serviceable creator, but not at Ja Morant's level, obviously. So,
but they got, I think they got to make threes. Like, I mean, they've had these games where they really struggle to hit shots. I think they're going to have to make threes, but they got to find some way to try to make up those points. I mean, that's a lot of points to make up. So if they're not knocking down shots, I think it's going to be stream of hard. So again, that's guys like Bane, guys like Dylan Brooks. I mean, you got to have those guys making shots, and I think they will. And Jaren, again, I would like to see more of that inside-outside game that we saw in the first half, because, I mean, that's when he's at his best. When he's just out there hunting threes, I mean, I think he's so much more effective when you can get both. Because, I mean, you hate to see him being one-dimensional, because we've seen what he can do inside-out. So, again, man, I'm just pulling for him, and hopefully he has a nice stretch. He's taking so much criticism from a lot of the fan base, and I'm just pulling for him. I mean, they paid him, and I want him to go out there and have the confidence. Because I think one thing for him, I think he has it. You've seen it over the last few games. I think he has it more now. I think he was really struggling with his confidence early in the season. Now this is an opportunity for him to go out there and show, hey, man, I'm going to be the second guy, and I can lead this team. My buddy Ja is out, but I'm going to go out here and lead this team and do what I need to do. And I'm hopefully that's what we see starting tomorrow night. But there's something that I do want to get into really quickly before we get out of here. And there's been a lot of talk since the Grizzlies have been struggling about the moves they made this offseason, moving Jones Valanciunas, of course, to New Orleans, and bringing in Steven Adams, and moving Grayson Allen to the Milwaukee Bucks. Those guys have both been playing extremely well. Jones Valanciunas, I'm not sure if he still was leading the NBA in three-point shooting. Grayson Allen having tremendous, putting in great minutes for Milwaukee. And a lot of fans have really been upset about those moves. And I think you have to put it in perspective, and you're not looking at the situation correctly. Because, I mean, it could be true both ways. If the Grizzlies had Jones Valanciunas and Grayson Allen right now, would they be a better basketball team? The answer to that question is yes. They would be a better basketball team, but it can also be true that it was still the right thing for the front office to do to move those guys. And that's where I am on it. Because if you keep Jones Valanciunas and Grayson Allen, I think for this season, you'd be – I think more solidified as you're going to be in that playoff tier, was your middle playoff tier or guaranteed kind of a play-in team. Without those guys, and if we ever sit in a situation now where Ja's out, so we don't know what's going to happen. But if Ja Morant is there, I think all season you have relative health. I think this team, even as constructed, would probably be at minimum in the play-in. I think they still make the play-in. So when you have JV and Grayson Allen on your team, I think it solidifies you as a playoff team, but a lower-tier playoff team. And that's not the goal of this front office. And when they make – another reason why they move those guys is because with JV, you want to see Jaren Jackson Jr. develop, and it was just not a good fit next to Jaren. You thought Steven Adams would be a better fit. And with Grayson, you wanted more opportunities for Desmond Bane and Anthony Melton to develop. So you move both of those guys. And if you re-sign JV, which they weren't going to do at the end of the season, you'd be cash-wrapped and put in a situation where you're a playoff team, but it lowers your ceiling. Like, you're not going to be able to build a roster that's a championship level team with JV on the books for big money. So, I mean, they moved those guys. And again, they took a step back. Zach Kleiman said at the end of the media end of last season media availability, that the road to a rebuild is not always linear. And he was foreshadowing that we might take a step back this summer. We might lose some of the guys, JV, Grayson Allen, that will play a major minutes for this team. And we could be maybe a slightly less as good as we were last year. We might not be quite as good as we were last year. We might take a slight step back, but it's going to help us take a step, multiple steps forward in the future. And that's what you're seeing right now. So a lot of fans like are worried about what's going on this season. And that's not what those moves were done for. Again, it might not look good right now, but they're collecting assets. And when they're able to get that third max guy, I think you're going to be pretty happy. And you look back on the situation, that's not something they would have been able to do if they had re-signed JV.
So I think this whole conversation, it's getting stale at this point. If you've listened to the show, Isaac and I have talked about this quite a bit. And if you're still wanting, sorry, let me back up. I'm going to say this. It is completely 150% okay for you to say that you miss JV and you feel like this would be a better team with him on it right now.
Yeah, because I love JV. I was a big time fan.
Yeah, and I like him too. You know, you are correct in that assessment that this team would be better right now with JV on it. Hands down, no question, this team would be better with JV on it right now. But I have to ask you, if you're hung up, if you're struggling with this, if you're just like it's in your mind and you can't get past it, what is your goal for this team? What do you want to see them do?
If you're okay with them being a 6-8 seed for the next 3 or 4 years, of course, resign JV. Don't worry about doing anything. If you just want to make the playoffs and you're happy with being in the playoffs most of the time, possibly being a first round exit, because that's probably what you're looking at, then fine. Like resign Grayson Allen, bring back JV, roll with what you got. But that's not what this front office is trying to do. They've said time and time again that their goal is to build a championship team here. And they weren't going to do that with those guys on the books. And you're also not maximizing the guys that are going to be here. Like, you want to maximize Jaren, and you want to maximize, find out what you have in Desmond Bane and De'Anthony Melton. And can they be guys that are part of this core going forward? And you couldn't do that with those guys. I mean, you had to kind of save Jenkins from himself last year. I mean, and it's crazy that I've seen some of the same people that were complaining about Grayson Allen playing last year now complain that he's not here anymore. I'm not going to throw out any names, but some of those same people that were complaining about, even about JV, about he's just not getting it done, he's not the guy. Now some of these people are, like, upset because they're not here anymore. And you just got to understand, man, if you're okay with this being a mediocre playoff team, then that would have made a lot of sense. But these moves weren't about this season and how good they were this season. It's how good they're going to be 3 years from now. And that's what we're looking at, and that's why they made those moves. And I think a lot of fans, I understand you wanted instant gratification. I'm even a guy that kind of leans towards maximizing what you have, but I understand what they're trying to do and what they're trying to build. And those were the right moves. Even if this team ends up at the top of the lottery this year, those were the right moves. And in hindsight, I would still do them 10 times out of 10. I mean, it makes sense long-term for what they're trying to build.
Yeah. I had this conversation with a group of my friends, and I asked them, and it doesn't apply necessarily because we all root for basically the same basketball team. We all like the Grizzlies. But we were talking just in general. Would you want your sports team to be a playoff team for a full decade, never miss the playoffs, but they're a first-round exit every year? Or would you rather them win one championship in a 10-year span? And the answer should be, With zero hesitation,
should be like, any hesitation.
Yeah, there should be no hesitation at all. The championship teams make the playoffs all the time. There are 8 teams from the East, 8 teams from the West every single year. 16 out of 30 teams, slightly over 50% of the league, they're making the playoff. What 32? It's exactly 50%, right?
Yeah.
I don't. Yeah. Yeah. 50% of the league makes the playoffs every single year. that's a common thing. Winning a championship is rare. And so, you know, like some of these storied franchises that have 17 or, you know, like the Bulls when they had that crazy run with Jordan and the Warriors, you know, and their dynasty with Steph and them are playing crazy good right now. Like that stuff doesn't happen all the time. It is extremely hard to put together a team that does that over an extended period. And kudos to those teams that are able to do that. But a championship is tough to get to. So these moves that, you know, moving JV, moving Grayson Allen, in the short term, it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt like hell to sit back and watch Grayson Allen. And if you look now, since the Bucks are getting healthy, Grayson Allen has fallen off. And it's not like he's gone invisible, but he's back to being the Grayson Allen that was here. You know, 10 points a game, 10, 12, 15 points. You know, he may break out.
But and I was going to say, he had times like that when he was here, when he was awesome, and there were times where he really struggled, couldn't make a shot. And that's because he's a role player. And you can't get hung up on role players. I mean, I like Grayson Allen. I loved JV. I mean, those are two of my favorite guys on the team by the end of last season. But, again, you can't get hung up on role players. I always try to tell people that. I know people fall in love with their guys on their team, but those guys are going to rotate in and out, especially when you're – a team that's still building. I mean, this is not anywhere near a finished product. And that's why I'm so surprised that people are so upset about this, because I mean, what is your goal? Is your goal to lose to Utah in five games in the first round? I mean, I don't know why you're not thinking bigger than that. I like these guys too. And even now we'll see what happens with this jaw injury, but I think this is a team that can make it to the first round of playoffs now as constructed. So if you can do something to help you long term, which these moves, that's why they were done. It's for they would help for help with development, and they also help with future flexibility. Man, you got to make those moves. And they were never going to re-sign JV. The contract that he got with the Pelicans, he was never getting that here in Memphis. Contract that Grayson Allen got with the Bucks, he was never getting that here. So I mean, that's kind of how you have to look at it.
Get something in return before you let him walk.
100%.
Good asset management by the front office. And we'll wrap it up, man. That's what it is. We're completely fine. We're not here. We're not beating you over the head, say, forget about them. No, they were both good players while they were here. But short term, this season was, it's rough. It's tough, you know, especially watching the Grizzlies struggle. It's tough to see it. But it's not about – you have to try to look beyond this year and look into the future. Maybe it works out. Maybe it doesn't. You know, we don't know. But what we do know is the ceiling with JV was essentially what the Grizzlies were last year. They could have maybe they get to the second round.
Development with John getting better and Jeremy coming back and him being the guy, they might get to the second round. But that's your ceiling. And then you got JV, who's a little bit older than the core guys on his team. And he's only going to get older. It's not like he's going to get – any younger. I mean, it was the right move. Again, we all love JV and he's looking fantastic with the Pelicans, but what are the Pelicans doing? It's not like he's carrying them anywhere right now. I mean, they were the right moves. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I mean, I get being upset with the way the team's playing. You saw them make the playoffs last year. You want to kind of make that next jump. But I don't even think, even if you had brought those guys back, I don't think they're making another jump. I think you're kind of looking at the same thing you saw last year. Got a team that could get into the playoffs, possibly win a couple games, but I think that was kind of your ceiling this year, even if you had brought those guys back. So not like they're taking some big, huge drop-off, like where they're going to be at the top of the lottery, unless this is Ja's out for a significant amount of time. Under normal circumstances, Ja was healthy and played all year, and this team, I think, would still be a team that's in their play-in, in the playoffs, first-round type of team, even without those guys. So it's not like they took a significant step back as far as that's concerned. And long-term, again, got to take a shot. And if you brought those guys back and paid them what they've gotten with their respective teams, that was going to kind of handcuff you to make some of these moves that they're done in the future. And that's why they made the moves. I mean, that's it.
Yep. So we'll wrap it up. We're knocking on the door of an hour here. We may actually roll a little bit over, but that's all right. Had good conversation. I enjoyed it. You can get us on Twitter. The show is at Ethos, E-T-H-O-S, Ethos Grizzlies. I am at DWill2111. Isaac, let them know where they can find you, man, and get us out of here.
Yeah, man. You can find me on Twitter at Isaac_Rivals, ISAAC _Rivals, man. We thank everyone for tuning in. Again, Grizzlies take on the Sacramento Kings. 5 p.m. tomorrow. We'll be back. Possibly we'll post game on Sunday. If not, we'll definitely be back sometime early next week. And until then, be gone.
And that will conclude our Sports Ethos presentation.